Cosmic Shed.
You're listening to The Cosmic Shed, a show that explores the way science and storytelling collide.
We'll be talking about films, books, music, theatre, TV, and anything else that catches our curiosity. From rigorously accurate science fact to ridiculously speculative science fiction.
We don't want to nitpick, but to celebrate the ways science and art can complement and enrich each other.
Mostly, we just want to talk about nerdy things that make us happy.
We've decided to do all of this from a crumbling garden shed somewhere in suburban Bristol.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between. Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. It's just me, Andrew, in the shed today because Ben's in China, Laura's in Winchester, Steve's in Iceland, and Maddie is in her lab doing science. But I just wanted to bring you this interview that I've just got with Professor Alan Williams, who is a composer. And going out on BBC Radio 4 this month is a brand new adaptation of the John Wyndham novel The Kraken Wakes. Now, John Wyndham is no stranger to BBC adaptations. Any of us alive and aware of science fiction in the early 1980s will be well aware of The Day of the Triffids, which was, of course, an adaptation of the John Wyndham novel. But this adaptation isn't for TV, it's a radio play, and it's of The Kraken Wakes, the 1953 John Wyndham novel. It is a radio play, but it's a radio play with a difference. And that difference is chiefly that it has a full symphony orchestra providing the music, the BBC Philharmonic. And the composer of that music is Professor Alan Williams. And I was delighted that he agreed to chat to me about how it all came about. And I began by asking him how he'd got involved in this production.
It was my wife, who's the radio drama producer of this, Justine Potter, and we started to talk about this, and I said, look, you know, the things that are in this novel are really dark, and they're also really kind of under the surface, that you don't see a lot of things, but they're also suggesting things on a huge scale, so what you need is an orchestra. I've worked several times with the BBC Philharmonic, and we just, without really thinking of any success, I went along to Simon Webb, who's the general manager of the BBC Philharmonic, and said, listen, we've got this great idea, thinking, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Yeah.
And he was very receptive to the idea of having the orchestra do the music for a radio drama. But one thing he said was that, look, I want if the orchestra is going to do this, I want them to be an equal voice.
The use of the orchestra is what just sort of grabbed me, because a full symphony orchestra is not something that we're kind of used to hearing on radio plays.
No, I mean, there are very practical reasons for that, which is that, generally speaking, you can't get the orchestra for free, and we were very, very lucky enough to have that. They provided this extraordinary resource, you know, it's 70 players, and they did it because they were interested in the project, and they thought it would be good for the orchestra to appear in a primetime sort of radio drama on Radio 4, so we were very, very lucky to have that opportunity.
Absolutely. So, right, you've had this idea with your wife, you kind of cooked it up at home, and you've gone, I know, let's get the BBC Phil. And then, against all odds, they've said, yeah, that sounds like fun, which is amazing. But where do you go next? What's kind of, so you then go back to your studio, I guess, and start writing, is that right?
Well, it wasn't quite as simple as that, because one of the things that was going to happen, we knew was going to happen, is that Justine sold the drama to the BBC on the basis that she'd been working with crime writer Val McDermott, who's, you know, extremely well known and loved by many millions of people around the world as a crime writer. And Justine did some drama on radio called the Dead Clever, or Dead series, so it's a returning series. Mm-hmm. And Val really liked working with Justine, and she was intrigued by the notion of doing some music. But she was obviously also slightly unsure about how the music would be used, and she'd never worked with an orchestra before. She'd never worked with a, for want of a better word, a classical composer before. And so we had quite a few meetings early on in the process. In a way, I'd read the novel before Val had. I'd read it two or three times, and Justine had read it two or three times. So we knew the novel before Val had time to come round to it. At one point, she said, well, you know the novel. Why don't you just flag up some of the big set pieces that you might use for orchestral music, and I'll see if those are things that would interest me making those big set pieces work in a drama. So actually, in a funny way, the music and how the music might work in the radio came first. Like, for example, you know, there's a couple of big set piece scenes in the novel. One where there's a descent in what's called a bathysphere. It's a very deep sea, high pressure water pressure resisting spherical submarine tank things, and I just knew that from the off that the darkness and mysteriousness of the undersea world and the alienness of the undersea world would be a fantastic work, you know, fantastic use of the orchestra. And luckily Val also saw that was a thing to spend some time looking at in the, you know, in the adaptation. And then there's another bit where they're called in the novel sea tanks. They're actually kind of robots that are controlled by this alien intelligence from the bottom of the sea, and they come out onto this they land on this island and crawl the way up, and then they sort of send out enormous tentacles and pull people in and dive back down into the sea. And this is another big set piece of the novel that John Wyndham has a lot of fun with, and musically it was a gift. When the sea tanks crawl up the beach, John Wyndham actually describes the sounds of this metallic grinding sound, and so obviously that's a gift to any composer.
So I actually did this interview with Professor Alan Williams before I'd heard any of the radio play, and I've heard the first episode now of The Kraken Wakes, and it's fantastic. I cannot wait for the second episode. And I think one of the reasons why I was particularly enjoying it is because, having heard from Alan Williams about some of the process that went into making the music, to writing the music, and what his thoughts were behind it, it really gave me, and I hope it gives you as well, another level to listen to the radio play on. And it was particularly what he talks about in this next segment which enriched it for me.
Once I got the sort of stage of having all the ideas, it was also sitting and reading the passages from Wyndham again and thinking, what would I do here? What's the atmosphere? And how could I make that atmosphere work on the orchestra? But one thing that started to happen was that one of the bits of material started to come in much more. And so in a sense, the piece is almost like a set of theme and variations. There's one theme that dominates all of the others, and it goes through lots of different variations. That's a bit of a musician's in thing, but if you listen out for it, you would hear that. You'll hear it most clearly at a passage where they're flying towards this Caribbean island. It's supposed to be one of the Cayman Islands. John Barry's another composer I really admire. He did all the early Bond music, and just how would you do sort of exotic music? But actually, that tune that I was using for that passage came from, well, we were on the Cayman Islands, and I wrote this tune. I thought it was a nice tune on the way back from the flight, and I set it when I got back and harmonised it. And because I'm a jazz musician as well, we gigged it, and then that tune became pretty much everything else, including all the sort of the horror music of the sea tanks coming out. So if you're that way inclined, you can hear a connection between all of the bits of music. Something about the mysteriousness of the Wyndham novel, and there's something about sci-fi in particular. I think, you know, you need something particularly in radio to give a sense of the strangeness of it all.
Have you listened to other science fiction radio plays in your process of making this one?
Not radio plays so much as films. If you look at the genre of sort of 1950s and 1960s sci-fi, particularly the B-movies, you know, the stuff that was made incredibly cheaply. Mm. What's interesting about the music is that the music is often very high quality, or what I would describe as very high quality, at least the skills on offer, not just in terms of the studio orchestras, but in terms of the composition is sometimes really extraordinary. And sometimes these are by people that you've never really heard of. There are some big names there, like Bernard Herrmann. I'm a big fan of Bernard Herrmann, both in Hitchcock movies and probably the most famous 1950s sci-fi movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. I've seen that movie, but never really paid any attention. And I don't know whether people really realise that the music is by the same guys who did North by Northwest and all of those Hitchcock movies. He uses a combination of the orchestra and two theremin and Hammond organ. That combination, suddenly he's able to conjure up much more otherworldly sounds out of the orchestra and the electronic instruments than he would normally do with a sort of spy thriller. And Herrmann did a lot of, he did several scores for The Twilight Zone as well, so where you get that similar sort of eerie quality. You don't have to look at the big films and the big composers. There's other films as well. You've never heard of the composer. And sometimes the composer's never even credited. But the quality of the music is nearly always just far, far better than the actual quality of the film.
There's one piece of music and science fiction which we've not mentioned, and it's just hovering in my head, and it's Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds.
That's an iconic score, and it summed up everything about the 1970s and its sort of bombastic linkage of big science sci-fi themes with rock music and a kind of symphonic scale of prog rock. I think it's a very, very impressive piece of work. Interesting about that is that there's all of the sort of the space rock thing, and it comes out of a subculture where space is incredibly important. During the 1970s, space was this, in popular culture was incredibly important. And compare it to something like, 70s psychedelic rock band like Hawkwind. All of their albums are about being in space. There's this sort of sense of awe and scale about what they do. You get that in the Jeff Wayne piece, and every generation has sort of seen sci-fi as through its own lens, or every decade, you might say. I mean, I think one of the best scores in a sci-fi movie is a Jerry Goldsmith score to The Planet of the Apes, which is 1979. And you think about that score compared to Star Wars. Probably Jerry Goldsmith was writing that score at the same time that John Williams was, more or less at the same time that John Williams was writing the score to Star Wars. They are worlds apart. Utterly worlds apart. I mean, Jerry Goldsmith's The Planet of the Apes score is completely bizarre and would work in an avant-garde concert hall. John Williams' score is, of course, masterful, and incredibly Wagnerian in the terms of the connections between character and theme, and it's brilliant. But it's not what I would describe as really sci-fi music. And then a few years later, Jerry Goldsmith gets to do another sci-fi movie, and it's Alien. It's only a few years after Star Wars. It's a much more dystopian movie than Star Wars. A brilliant movie, but Jerry Goldsmith's score is actually suddenly the kind of post-John Williams musical landscape where the music is much more easy on the ear, the regular time signatures, things in harmony, you know, things that would sound a little bit like romantic music rather than like the avant-garde music that he was doing just, you know, a few years previous, prior to that. So there's been a big sea change in the kind of music that people were doing. And I think one of the things that interested me about the music in the 1950s and the 1960s is that you can hear composers using the weirdness of the setting of sci-fi as an excuse to try out all these avant-garde techniques that they're getting from the concert hall in the post-war avant-garde.
Now, if you're a regular listener to the Cosmic Shed, that's probably reminded you of when Stephen Gallagher was talking to us in the Ex Machina episode about the sea change in terms of filmmaking in science fiction after Star Wars. And I thought that was really interesting that, again, it's come up that Star Wars caused a kind of sea change in the music landscape of science fiction. If you've not heard that episode or not seen that film, Ex Machina, do so immediately. Do both of those things, particularly see the film. And obviously to listen to the episode, go to thecosmicshed.com and find the episode on Ex Machina. Now, this production of The Kraken Wakes, you would think that they had enough on their plate writing the music for the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra to play, but they thought they'd go one step further.
We did it almost crazily as a live production, which is something that nobody ever does, because radio drama is kind of constructed using various sequencing tools like Pro Tools.
Yeah.
And you record a little bit of it, like one scene, and then you put the sound effects on later. So the actual record time is relatively short, but it's all constructed in post-production. We didn't do that. We wanted to do a live show, and so we did it as a live show in Salford in the BBC Philharmonic Studios.
Oh, wow.
And we had all the actors. They didn't learn the parts as they would do in a theatre production. And if there were some lines that didn't come out quite clearly enough, they went over them again. So the audience was, on the one hand, was hearing what they would normally do as a live audience with a radio drama, which does happen sometimes, but especially with comedy. But they were also hearing the orchestra playing the music live, and more or less as it would be in the final show. And then we went back, and there was a clean recording of everything that we had. But almost all of it is just what happened on the night.
I hope you've enjoyed hearing from Professor Alan Williams. I know I did. It really enriched my listening to the first episode of The Kraken Wakes. I can't wait for the second. Thank you so much to Alan Williams for joining me. We'll be back soon with another episode of The Cosmic Shed. If you'd like to hear more of The Cosmic Shed, visit thecosmicshed.com. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at The Cosmic Shed. Hopefully it won't just be me in the shed next time, and we will be talking to Professor Bruce Hood all about the Disney Pixar film Inside Out. So we really do mean it when we say science fact, science fiction, and everything in between. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.